Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review on this Saturday, January 31st, 2015, as we discuss the world of sports. As always, call number is 347-215-6180. We are almost at game time. Just a little bit, just less than basically, 30 hours away from Super Bowl 49. Like you, I am tired of all the hype. I'm tired of all, the Marshawn Lynch not talking stories, the deflate gate. At this point, I'm just ready for a football game. I mean, seriously. Just play. Somebody just play. I want to see somebody get tackled. I want to see how New England handles Marshawn Lynch. I want to see, Legion of Boom versus Tom Brady. I want to see some football. I guess there's nothing else to it. Like I said, the NFL, and even besides Deflategate, the NFL really, really needs to consider cutting the Super Bowl back to a week. I mean, seriously, it just gets to a point where you can only do so many interviews and talk about storylines. And there are only so many stories to be told. I mean, really. Now, I'm not one who's ever going to feel sorry for Marshawn Lynch or for any player who doesn't want to be interviewed. I'm not. But, again, there are only so many stories that I want to hear we talked about. Right now, I'm joined by the one and only Robert Sapp. How you doing, Mr. Sapp?
Doing well.
I was just talking, I just opened the show a couple minutes ago, just talking with the audience about, I'm tired of all, at this point, I'm tired of all the hype. I'm tired of all the side stories. I'm ready for the game. I'm ready to see somebody get tackled. I'm ready to see matchups. I'm ready to see, game plans. I'm just ready for some football at this point. I'm done with all the hype that goes with the Super Bowl. And I really think the NFL should consider cutting the Super Bowl weeks back to 1 week. I really do. I thought about it over the course of the week. Even without Deflategate, it's only so many side stories that you can hear over and over again, so many questions that can be asked over and over again. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of cutting it down to 1 week. It's just not enough prep time coming out of the championship games. You want to maximize maximize the lack of injuries as much as possible. So given the teams, given the two conference champions, 2 weeks to prepare, 2 weeks to heal, most importantly, for the biggest game of the year, I think is the better play to go.
I understand that from a physical standpoint, but let's be honest, how many injuries are going to get healed or remedied over a course of 1 week? We've seen Super Bowls, the two Super Bowls that have gone just 1 week have been, two of the better Super Bowls, with, the Giants beating your Bills, back 24 years ago, back in 1991 season, a 1990 season, and the Rams Patriots Super Bowl, the Patriots' first Super Bowl. It was also a tight game.
Yeah. No, I totally hear that, and I don't I don't know if it would necessarily be a bit like a bad thing to have it cut down to 1 week, but I do think that the 2 week period is important just for the logistics of the team and getting to the Super Bowl and getting, you know, players. It just feels like 1 week for all of that would be incredibly intense. And I do think, I mean, like, yeah, you're right. There's, you know, like if you have like a major injury, you know, then there would be 2 weeks wouldn't be a possible. But, you know, think about this game. If this game was played a week ahead, there would be a significant possibility we're playing it without Richard Sherman, we're playing it without Earl Thomas, or they're significantly, you know, reduced. And I don't want to see a Super Bowl where that happens, especially going against the Patriots. I don't want to see that Super Bowl.
No, I mean, nobody wants to see, you know, any part of Legion of Boom not healthy in a Super Bowl. I mean, I think you can go either way with it.
But you know, I hear what you're saying. It's forever.
It's forever. I guess also, too, physically, it makes...
It got me through a week. It's beautiful.
Yeah, the Deflategate. Yeah, the Deflategate was hilarious. It was hilarious. We had fun. We had a lot of fun with the Deflategate. We did. I have to admit that. As much it didn't. I actually don't think it got redundant from that standpoint. But as a matter of fact, the Deflategate might have even made it. If there was no Deflategate, it would have just been flat out boring. To be honest with you. I give the Deflategate a lot of credit for just out of sheer entertainment. Yeah, I can understand from an injury standpoint, you know, especially with Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman. I guess what the NFL could do also, if they're not going to cut it down by a week, is can they lessen how many times players have to talk to the media? I mean, can we just do media day Tuesday and then make it optional? Like, do the players have to talk to the media almost every single day? Because I understand the obligation players have for their jobs, but again, there's only so much talking that a player can do. Like, if I'm a player, I'm like, listen, you ask me the same question Tuesday, you ask the same question Wednesday. I don't have it. I don't know how much I have for you at this. It's Thursday at this point.
Yeah, and I also think like it's a little bit indicative on the audience. You know, like in terms of how much you're going to consume of it, right? Like I said, like usually, like my MO is that like the week after the conference championship games, I start getting myself geared up in professional basketball and college basketball. Like I'll start getting myself back acclimated back to the NBA and college basketball season, and then I'll dip my toe in every once in a while on the second week leading up to the Super Bowl. You know, like that's kind of like how I like try to handle it, because it's way too by the end all you're hearing is the same stuff over and over and over again, and it's crazy. So that's again why I say thank goodness for Deflategate, because that gave me a week. Like I was into talking about the NFL, you know, for a week. And you know, on the flip side of it, you know, this is why the NFL is king, just because it's like any news, like out of this horrible, horrible year that the NFL has had public relations wise, their ratings for everything will
off the
chart.
Yeah.
And it's like, it just doesn't matter. Any news is ultimately good news for the NFL. Crazy.
It doesn't matter how bad the NFL has looked this year. And again, this, in all my years of following NFL football, this has been, from a public relations standpoint, the worst year ever for the NFL. But they're going to make the most money ever in a season. It's a reason why they can be a PR nightmare. You know, it's a reason why it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter to them. They'll come out and say, you know, we're embarrassed and we're not happy, and then they'll look at the Sunday night ratings. You're like, yeah, okay, life's not all bad.
life's not all bad at all.
It could be worse. So, yeah.
Right, you know what I thought of? I thought of the Wire. You know, they got the best product.
Yes. I did. You know, I was up there on Wire too. Like, yeah. Like, you know what? We don't need every corner. We got the best product. We can have, you know, we're going to make more money even with less corners. So, you know, forget all this fighting for all the corners. Like Stringer said, forget all this beefing over all the corners. We got the best product. Competition will have to come to us, and we'll make all the profit. So, you know, that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, they have by far in a way. I don't even compare any other sport to the NFL. It's not like NFL. Like the NFL draft will do higher ratings than a baseball or NBA playoff game. Like that.
Well, they said the Pro Bowl selection, the NFL Pro Bowl selection, did NBA playoff numbers.
Yes, I believe it.
That's out of control.
Yeah.
Out of control. Just Irvin and Carter picking people.
Yes, picking team, yes. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, crazy. Yeah, this is it's a juggernaut right now, you know. Juggernaut right now, so can't tell the NFL nothing.
No, you can't. You can't. I mean, they're like, we're in education. They're like the kid. They're like the student who is a complete butthead, but it gets straight A's. Like, what can you really say to that kid?
Yeah, you can't.
Like, you know, they get straight A's, but you know, but they are complete buttheads. And it's really like, look at his grade. That grade is
hard. Hard getting those grades.
Yep. So it's hard. So we look at this. You look at this matchup. What is the most to you? What is the most intriguing thing about this matchup that jumps out?
Yeah. Here's the interesting thing. I think the most intriguing thing is the Patriots' flexibility, because I think that's the thing that's making it the hardest to. For at least for me, to definitively pick the outcome. The idea that we're just not quite sure what the Patriots could come up with that can surprise Seattle. I've listened to player after player and people, I've listened to players after players, analysts after analysts this week talk about, you know, and people who played against the Patriots talk about, you know, your game plan for one thing, and then on Sunday they show you something completely different. And then it's about the adjustment. And so that's the thing that I'm wondering wondering if any, because that would be the flip side of my thing. You know, I'm not sure that'll work against the Seahawks, but I'm wondering what will they present, the Seahawks will see, and then what is the adjustment to that? So that's kind of like the theme that's going on in my head. I'm just really interested to see that kind of like that matchup / adjustment that the Seahawks will make to what the Patriots, to whatever wrinkle the Patriots come up with. On the flip side of that, though, I think like the matchup of matchups will be Gronkowski. Just like Marshawn Lynch probably has to be the best player on the offense for the Seahawks. Gronkowski is going to have to be the best player on the offense for the Patriots. So I will be looking for because I think the wrinkles that they put in place will be to try to get Gronk open in the middle of the field.
Yeah, this, like, you know, if, to steal a boxing analogy, they say styles makes fights. And you talk about the Patriots' flexibility. Like, they can morph into just anything at any time. You know, we'll run the ball 40 times. You know what? We'll pass the ball 50 times. And they've been doing that for years now. But then you look at Seattle. They're like, this is what we do. This is who we are. Good luck trying to stop it.
Yeah. We're more talented than you.
Yes. Yes. We're like, they're like, you know, and I wasn't around, because I wasn't born, but I think about the Green Bay Packers. You knew all the plays. Everybody knew all the plays, you know, but they just did what they did, and nobody was able to stop it. Like, I mean, especially speaking more on the offense with their running game, power sweep, a seal here, a seal there, like this, you know, that famous video of Vince Lombardi drawing up the plays, and, you know, back then, you know, you look back in the 60s, that's one thing. But look, to do what Seattle does defensively now, you know, occasionally offensively they'll throw a couple of tricks at you, some deception. We've seen it before. But defensively, they are who they are. They're going to do their base coverage, you know, that zone, you know, three deep, use the, you know, quarterbacks to match up with your receivers. Like, they, I mean, you know, rush with strictly four pass rushers, their front four, rarely blitz. They'll blitz occasionally. But for the most part, like, they are probably the most predictable team unit. Out of all the units in professional football, they're probably the most predictable one in terms of what they are going to do. But yet nobody over the last basically 3 years has seemingly consistently had an answer for it, and that's to me, you know, can New England make them turn to something different? Can New England make them adjust? That's what I'm going to be watching out for. And to me, that's the biggest out of all the individual matchups. In terms of team matchups, that's the thing that intrigues me the most, I should say. Going back to my original question, that intrigues me. Can New England make Seattle do something different? Can they make them uncomfortable? Because you and I both know Seattle is the type of team that they're like a baseball team who is not worried about trying to blow you out. They'll play a one-run game and be like, you know what? We got a beast of a bullpen. We got Mariano Rivera. You know, we're good. 2-1, 1-0, we're fine. We're fine late innings. We don't gotta beat your brains in. You know, if you turn the ball over, you allow us, we'll beat your brains in. But if the game's close, okay. Fourth quarter, 3 minutes play, field goal game, that's right up our alley.
I agree with that.
As far as what you said about Gronkowski, you look at Gronkowski, and you look at, you know, you don't compare anybody to a quarterback. You get a franchise quarterback, that's the most valuable commodity you can have in football. But I'm looking at Gronkowski. I'm saying it has been a long, long time since I've seen an individual player, non-quarterback, carry so much weight in terms of whether or not his team wins or loses. And to get the audience a little data on that, I'm saying, because New England won 12 games this year, and in their 12 wins, Gronkowski had like 10 touchdowns, like 955 yards receiving, just, you know, great numbers. And their four losses, he only had 2 touchdowns and basically like only like 169 yards receiving. He basically was a non-factor. Not Tom Brady, not LeGarrette Blount, not any other player comes close on that team, he is the barometer that you use to measure the Patriots. Amazingly.
Yeah. There's a couple reasons for that. Here's the truth of the matter. If we want to break it down. I heard Mike and Mike, they were spitting out a statistic. I can't remember the statistic specifically, but it was about throwing to the outside numbers. Tom Brady, the Patriots offense, does not throw to the outside numbers a lot. They're not doing the deep outs. They're not doing the goals. You know, it is all about working the middle of the field. And they will manipulate their offense to do that. And part of that reason is because, you know, Brady's is attrition. We're seeing it with Manning. We're seeing it with Brady. You know, we probably to a certain extent saw it with Drew Brees this year, you know, with a lot of those interceptions, you know, not being able to fit it in as tight as window as you think you can anymore. So we're starting to see that with this generation of quarterbacks that's been so great for so long. But what the Patriots have done is they, you know, unlike New Orleans, you know, they just said, Tom, don't make those throws anymore. We're gonna design an offense where you don't put yourself in that position. You don't put us in that position. And so everything is about working the middle of the field. And then on top of that, you know, you can do that. You can have that luxury because your greatest mismatch is Gronkowski. He's an animal. I know this. He was my tight end all three of my fantasy teams. You know, I say with Gronk.
Rob has adopted Rob Gronkowski as far as fantasy football.
You know, it just I'm dying. You know, he's a matchup nightmare. He's big, fast, strong, everything. We all know that about Gronk. And so, you know, like Tom Brady, the other thing, the second thing part of that is, you know, Tom Brady, absolutely, of course, quarterback, most valuable player on that team, on the offense. But because of offensive line issues earlier in the year and just the game plans that team will try to go against Brady, Brady's only going to have that ball in his hand for 2 seconds. Particularly in this matchup with Seattle, he's going to have to get that ball out quick. I mean, laser, like lightning quick. And so the person who has the best potential of getting yards after the catch is Gronkowski. They can do different stuff for Julian Edelman and, you know, like try to get rubs and just different things like, you know, that offenses do. But in terms of just a physical standpoint, the person that, you know, Brady having a ball in his hand 2 seconds, you know, out Gronkowski, he's going to be the one who's going to be able to get those yards after catch. And that's why I think, like, you know, that's why he is the linchpin to their offense.
Here's the thing, and it goes both ways, and this is why this is such a fascinating matchup from looking at just how these teams play. One of the weaknesses in Seattle defense, if they have a weakness, but it's not a glaring one, but it's one. It's really the only one you can attack, is working the middle of the field with a tight end, because more times than not, the quarterback does not have enough time to go deep down the field, even if you have receivers who can get down the field. And the Patriots really don't have receivers. Maybe Brandon LaFell occasionally, but they don't really have that guy who can take the top of your defense.
That's
not their game. So, you know, they actually can hurt Seattle from that standpoint. They're going to have to. And this is why, to me, when I look at the key, I feel like when I look at the key to this game, it's going to be whether the Patriots can protect Tom Brady. Because if they're not able to go down the field with Gronkowski and work the middle with Gronkowski, or work anybody receiver slot receiver, work any receiver in the middle. That short stuff, we saw how that short stuff looked last year in the Super Bowl with those little 5 yard outs and quick passes because Peyton Manning didn't have a defensive end in his face within like 2 seconds. It doesn't turn out well for your receivers. Seattle's defense tackles too well. They do not give up yards after the catch. They really don't. Like, they tackle. They're one of the best tackling teams in the league, and they destroy, and I mean destroy, short passing games.
Yep.
Like, if you are a short passing team, you are going – you're playing right into Seattle's favor, which to me, I'm very intrigued to see. Obviously, New England wants to run the ball. I was ahead of myself with that, running the ball. Obviously, New England wants to get the ball to Gronkowski, but to me, I'm very intrigued to see how patient they will be with the running game. I remember a game this year against Green Bay, which to me was probably the game of the year in the NFL as far as just the high level. They really kind of fell in love with this. I don't know if it was the Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady matchup, and really fell in love with the passing game and got away from running the football. Now, I understand Green Bay's defense running the ball for whatever reason, because Green Bay's defense is not nowhere near as good as Seattle's in terms of stopping the run. But, you know, they're going to have show some patience. We know what Seattle wants to do and is going to do unless the game gets out of hand. Completely out of hand on in terms of them being on the wrong side of it. They're going to run the ball no matter what. Like Marshawn Lynch could have 10 yards at halftime. It doesn't matter. If the game's in striking distance or tied or close within one score, they are going to run the ball. Even when they were down 2 scores, it's Green Bay.
Yep.
They stuck
that furious comeback. They were running.
Yes. They were running the football. So we know what they're going to do. New England, again, and I worry, and people brought this up. Now, I've read a couple articles on this. You know, we've seen them be committed to the run over the course of the playoffs, cold weather, nighttime, and things of that nature. Now, you know, Phoenix, great conditions, fast track. Will they try to now, you know, throw the ball all over the place? That's very interesting to see how that goes.
The answer to that is yes. But here, I do want to say, just to stick with the Seattle defense for a second. But it's interesting that you brought up that Green Bay game, the playoff game, and you watched it twice, like I watched it twice, right? You know, it was that fascinating of a game. And I would say for the first half, outside of the inefficiency in the red zone. It was a master class on how to attack the Seattle defense. In particular, watching that game, what I saw was Seattle is great at anticipating what you're going to do. And once they anticipate what you're going to do, whether it be run, whether it be pass, you're pretty much dead in the water. You're not going anywhere. And so what Green Bay was doing, and I think this will be the key to the game for New England, was they were doing the unexpected they were showing them one formation that suggested run, and then they would pass out of that formation. They were showing another formation that suggested pass, and then you remember they do those, like, the quick turnaround handoff to Eddie Lacy, so he would just kind of, like, shoot up the gap.
They were doing it even in shotgun formations where they were doing
it. And I was like, this is the first – I'm just like, that's brilliant. That's exactly how to attack them. You want to keep them guessing in terms of the formation. Because, as we kind of alluded to, Seattle's not going to do a lot of shifting of their personnel. But what they're doing, because they're all such great ball hawks, is they are anticipating what it's going to be, and they're attacking to the ball. And so what I'm also looking for the Patriots to do, very much overrated. LeGarrette Blount is not a great running back.
I'm glad you bring it up. LeGarrette Blount, a guy who, you know, got rid of by Tampa Bay, walked off field against Pittsburgh. All of a sudden, he's become Earl Campbell. Let's calm down on LeGarrette Blount.
No. I mean, geez. No. If the Patriots line up and show them run, LeGarrette Blount will get 2 yards, if that. Period. So they will have to run out of different formations, and just as we know the Patriots all year long, anybody who's played fantasy and tried to play against the Patriots running back for the entire year, you're usually always wrong. So they're going to be running.
I've got a couple of years in fantasy trying to do that.
I guarantee there's no way Seattle's falling for that line. Like, they're not thinking, oh, LeGarrette Blount's going to come in here and try to run. They know the Patriots are going to be running different backs out of different formations for the entire game. So I say that to say, there will be some running, and they will try to keep the Seahawks guessing, but this game is going to be about that spread timing passing game, quick passes, and then yards after catch.
Yes, yes. And here's the thing. If you're the Patriots, let's be fair, let's be honest, you're running, you are, the main incentive you have to run is to keep Seattle's defense front four off Tom Brady's ass.
Yes.
That is, to me, the number one reason why you're running. You're running to keep them, keep that defense honest, not having Tom Brady get teed off on. Because that front four is vicious. Front four is very underrated. They got guys who can get to the quarterback without blitzing. As great as the secondary is, and it is a tremendous secondary. We know an all-time great secondary. That front four can get to the quarterback, and not so much only with sacks. I'm talking about hits, pressures. You know, they really can make it uncomfortable for a quarterback and for an offensive line. And I thought Green Bay, you know. Like to add on, get back to your Green Bay point. Green Bay did a tremendous job with the pass protection. Their offensive line did a tremendous job in that game. There was very few times, despite the injury to Aaron Rodgers, that he was even ever touched. I mean, I think he got sacked once, but for the most part, he had a clean pocket to throw in. And you know, again, I'm sure that Green Bay tape has been studied, analyzed, dissected 100 times by the Patriots, as they should have, because really, outside of the collapse that Green Bay had, as far as, like you said, the first half, in particular the first half, because we know how conservative they got in the second half. First half, that play calling, going, you know, the runs to Eddie Lacy, the quick runs to Eddie Lacy, using Richard Rodgers in the middle, it was an okay tight end at best. He's not Gronkowski, of course. You know, the passes, you know, in the middle to work in the middle of the field, to set up a lot of their red zone scoring, put them in position to score in the red zone, really, really baffled. It had Seattle frustrated. Let's be honest, their defense had their defense shaking their heads.
Yeah, I mean, it's just I won't go that far because even after, because their offense kept putting they were more frustrated at their offense who kept putting them on a 30, you know, a 30-yard drive.
Yeah, that's true.
I won't go that far because Seattle, you know, as much as we're talking about how, you know, well Green Bay's offense, like they did, they pulled, you know, they were doing everything. Aaron Rodgers, at the end of the day, had like 135 yards passing. Their defense is just flat out very good. But
the execution obviously wasn't up to Green Bay standard as far as scoring in the red zone, but it was the idea, the blueprint, more about how you should go about attacking.
Yes, they cannot diagnose what you're going to do and you be successful. It's just they're they're, I mean, it's understated how good they are. They're that good. If you show them, it's like, you know, like how they say on the flip side, you know, with a great, with an elite quarterback, if you're an elite quarterback and you show them what you're going to do, they're going to be able to pick you apart. Seattle is an elite defense. If you show them what you're going to do, they will crush it, period, point blank. So you have to be able to do things out of different formations, not necessarily to make them adjust their personnel. And that was Denver's biggest mistake last year, is that they were trying to manipulate their offense to then make them change their defense. And that's not going to happen. But having them guess what you're going to do at a different formation can be effective. And I think Green Bay showed that, at least for the first half, in the NFC Championship game.
You know, you look back last year at what happened in the Super Bowl, and again, me and you, we did a Super Bowl pregame show, and we both liked Seattle, of course, in that game. But we kind of thought that there was a possibility that it could be a beatdown. We didn't pick it. We didn't pick a beatdown, but we kind of was like, we were looking at these matchups, and we were like, I couldn't see how Denver was going to win it.
Yeah.
I don't get that sense with this game. I have much more respect for New England than I ever have for Denver because of I just think New England's a much more just more physical, better coach. I mean, John Fox is a good coach. Bill Belichick is an all-time great coach. So,
and
they
also had a year to adjust to what they saw. Because if the Patriots had made the Super Bowl outside of Denver last year, they would have
got
42.
Yeah,
they would have got destroyed
too.
So they had the year to see, like, that actually is the target now. You know, we gotta get there. So, and to their absolute credit, they've adjusted some.
Without question. I mean, listen, we knew last year how much better the NFC was, pronouncedly better the AFC was than the AFC. It was just all like whoever, whether it was Seattle or San Francisco. That team was going to win the Super Bowl, no matter what the matchup was. It was San Francisco, New England, San Francisco, Denver, Seattle, New England. It wouldn't matter. Seattle and San Francisco were the two best teams in football, which to me makes, you know, when I look at this matchup this year, the reason I love this matchup so much, even though, again, Green Bay easily could have been here without question, but these are the two best teams in football, and that, you know, in the age of free agency, in the age of, you know, that big upset that we get in the playoffs occasion, that we get, you know, with teams that like Baltimore and the Giants having these runs to get Super Bowls, that is a rare occurrence where you get the two best teams in all of football who are both physical and who are both just. Or both champions. I mean, look at these teams. This is a borderline historic Super Bowl. You have, I think, legacy versus dynasty. You know, Patriots trying to go for number four. Seattle trying to repeat. You rarely see two teams in the Super Bowl that have a championship pedigree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the career, like I said, I'll be shocked if this was not a classic game, especially considering how close New England Patriots Super Bowls have been. I mean, look at the scores of their games, you know, 17-20, 21-17, 32-29, I mean, 24-21. They have had a history of playing close Super Bowls. I mean, do you expect a very close game?
Yeah. Like I said, this was hard for me to call. No, I'm being like not even, you know, the reverse jinx, none of that stuff. That stuff aside, like this one has become a hard game for me to call from that standpoint. I anticipated being a well played game. I think the final score won't be 3 points. I think it'll be more than 3 points.
Okay. But do you expect it to be a fourth quarter game though? Like the game is up for grabs in the fourth quarter. Do you expect that?
It would be hard pressed for me to see anybody getting that much distance where the other team feels like they're out of it in the fourth quarter.
If you're Bill Belichick, and we know Bill Belichick is the master of not only adjustments in game, especially in game adjustments, what happens if it gets to a point where they are keeping Gronkowski under control? What would be the next move on a chessboard from that standpoint? They're containing Gronkowski.
That'll be the $50 million question. I think like if you're controlling Gronkowski, what you're hoping is that you're not doing it with just one guy, that you're doing it with double team, and that through formation and identifying who's the double team, that you can either get, you know, this could be a game, you know, this could be the reason why they traded for Tim Wright, you know, the former Tampa tight end,
right.
Get him in there and get him some work on the opposite end. He's a very good pass-catching tight end. And so you have that, you know, Varane coming out of the backfield or coming in as eligible in the tight end position, however they want to, you know, work that or, like, everything like that, you know. But identifying where the double coverage and where the help is coming from Gronkowski, and then formation-wise attacking it from that aspect and then also through formation running to. I was going to say running to the. Attacking that defense up the middle, like running right at them. I think like
yes.
The most effective that I saw was like when you kind of you pounded up the middle on Seattle.
Yeah, they have too much team speed to go east west. You have to attack them north south. Like their speed that like they're trying to get the edges. Good luck trying to get the edges on them. And running, I mean, good like that. That's not going to happen. I just like you said, you're absolutely right on the money with that. They going straight up the middle is your best bet, not only in passing, but in running as well. The reason I bring up the Gronkowski thing is there are not too many teams that even have the players to match up with Gronkowski. They have a lot of options in terms of what they could try to do to Gronkowski.
Yep.
KJ Wright, you know, Bruce Irvin, Bobby Wagner,
yep.
Cam Chancellor over the top.
Yep.
They have the kind of athletes in pass coverage mm-hmm. that can, you know, can make Gronkowski work. I don't think anybody can stop him to where it completely shut him down, but they can, you know, they're probably the only team in the league that has a multitude of options across the board defensively. So, to me, and, you know, Bill Belichick, of course, a lot smarter than I am, I'm sure he's thinking about, you know, he has to be thinking about a plan B if Gronkowski is somewhat controlled. Right, exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. Because you are facing a defense. You know, and make no mistake about it, folks, this Seattle defense is an all-time great defense. When you consider leading a league 3 years in a row in scoring defense, when you consider what they've done against the run, what they've done against the pass, like you see, certain defenses are called great, but you can run against them. Or certain defenses are called great, or you can throw, have some success against them. They've been great in stopping the run and stopping the pass almost equally for 3 years.
Back-to-back years, total number one in total defense and number one in points allowed.
Allowed, yes. I mean, that
just
been like
– just doesn't get better than that. It's just period.
No.
Period and point blank.
The thing about it is like they're not as quite as good as they were last year, but last year they only gave up like 14.4 points a game. This year, you know, it's blowing up to 15.9.
Yeah.
Just because they're not as quite as good as they were last year doesn't mean they're not just off the charts. Like last year, you know, that was one of the great single season defense performances of all time, especially capping off what they did in the Super Bowl. And I think this year they almost became a victim of their own success by how people gauged them. And I'm looking at their numbers, I'm like, they're still leading the league in points and yards. I'm like, it's not like they've fallen to like out of the top five, top ten. I'm like, they're leading the league in both categories. And
yeah, no, they're
you
great.
Know, like, that defense is, especially, and you look at this year, when they struggled, Cam Chancellor wasn't himself. He was playing with an injury.
Yeah.
Bobby Wagner was hurt.
Yeah.
When they got those two guys, if you look at their numbers, when they got those two guys back healthy,
yeah,
that's when your team started averaging, like, 6 points a game against them.
I will say again that, here's what I'll say. Even that quarter, like I saw a stat on ESPN where through the first 12 games, you know, when like some of those injuries and stuff were consistent or a problem, the tight end position had caught something like 12 TDs and the quarterback had a 95 QBR going with the tight end. After week 12, the QBR goes to 25.8, and there's like two TDs that were mixed in there. And so it's like even what would have been their weakness, what you would have identified as the weak point in their defense, by the end of the year, they had essentially eliminated that as a weak point. And so that's what you're faced with if you're Brady and your Belichick and your Josh McDaniels is you're attacking everywhere you go with this team, you're attacking the strength. And this is why I continue to marvel at Seattle. And I can't remember who said it, but I love how they put it. This team is perfectly built to deconstruct the pocket passer. This team is meant to destroy a pocket passer. This is what they do. So if you don't have a Russell Wilson on the opposite side, you know, it's going to be tough sledding. It's going to be tough sledding. Or
physical
running game.
Yes. So with that being said, over the last 2 years, they're 10-0 against Super Bowl winning quarterbacks. You know, we're talking Aaron Rodgers, the crop, you know, the cream of the crop, Peyton Manning,
mm-hmm.
the world, you know, Drew Brees.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes. So, and all those guys are for the most part pure pocket passers. When I've seen them struggle against quarterbacks, and it's going to sound crazy, but it did happen, considering how terrible he was this year. Was I would say last year against Colin Kaepernick a couple times because of his ability to move the pocket to get outside the pocket and his ability to run. And I've seen it, especially last year in the NFC Championship, like he had over 100 yards rushing. Again, that type of guy seems to give them. the most trouble, despite the fact that he's not, again, not as good as those quarterbacks I just mentioned, but just from a pure matchup standpoint. Like, if you give them a target, and Tom Brady, you know, at this, well, Tom Brady's never been a scrambler, especially at this point in his career. He could barely, like, he can't, he doesn't move. You give them a target, that seems to, you know, play into their hands. When I've seen them against these quarterbacks.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. This is what they do. They're in their wheelhouse. You know, I mean, this is also, you know, the ultimate head game Super Bowl, because you got Belichick over on one side, you know, being like, nobody believes in us. Everybody hates us. Nobody wants us to win. And you got Seattle, who can literally be like, yo, our entire Super Bowl experience has been hijacked by the Patriots, or the league has been finding us, testing us, you know, doing all this, and the league doesn't want us to win. You know, like, they, like, it's this kid, there's so many mind games on both sides that each coach can use in this one, that it's going to be, that's going to be good. Can we talk about Patriots defense versus Seattle's offense?
Yes. Yes. If you're the Patriot, yeah, the Seattle defense is so good. I mean, you could do multiple shows on the Seattle defense. Yeah. The Patriot defense, which this year was very good, great secondary, but can be run upon. You can't run on them.
Mm-hmm.
So they even Indianapolis had success running the ball. The times that they did try to run the ball, we saw what Baltimore did against them running the ball. Baltimore is another power, physical running game. Not even as good as Seattle. Seattle this year running the ball had one of the great single seasons of all time running the ball statistically. Now, a lot, you know, not only the greatness of Marshawn Lynch, but also Russell Wilson. I don't think he had 1,000 yards. He had close to 1,000 yards. I don't think he actually got there, but he had like close to like 900 yards rushing this year.
He's off the chart.
He was, it was ridiculous. I watched it. I watched it as a Redskins fan. They ran about five plays. I'm like, yo, they're running the same plays. Can somebody tackle him? that dude with the corner with the ball in his hand. He's a quarterback. His name's Russell. Yeah. My goodness. Oh, man. So that rushing attack is the best in the league. You know, to you, if you're a Seattle, if you're New England's defense, what concerns you more, Lynch or Wilson running the ball?
Yeah. That is the perfect question. And that's why I wanted to talk about this, because it's so fascinating to me. So I'll use the Green Bay game as a microcosm of this, right? Like, for the first three quarters, essentially, he started getting better in the second half of the third quarter.
Yes,
but Russell Wilson
yes.
was horrible, right? Horrible.
Yeah.
A lot of it, you know, I mean, like, there's even piece and parts. You can piece and parts out all everything, blah, 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 whatever. I put a lot of it on the play calling.
Right.
The passes that he was being asked to make at that particular time and juncture in the game. And so I say this to say, when it got down to crunch time, we saw what they did. They ran that read option.
Yes, that's their bread and butter.
They ran it to perfection. And the reason why they ran to perfection, because I was looking, like, there was a moment when I was watching that game, and even though Green Bay was down by X, they were handing the ball off to Lynch, and it hit me. I was like, Lynch is the best player on this field. He got into such a zone where he was unstoppable. Like, you just knew he was going to score. Like, I was watching, I was just like, there's no way they can stop him right now. And so I say that to say Lynch is the most important person between those two, because feeding Lynch the ball Like, we know this is what the Patriots are going to do. They're going to look at the game film, and they're going to say, what's the thing that we have to take away? And they're going to identify the run game, and they're going to identify that read option. We have to take that away. But the the first part of that process is going to be, we have to stop the run game. Well, how can you stop the run game unless you have to crash down on it? You have to commit. You have to show commitment there, because Lynch is such a physical runner. He can run inside, he can run outside, he can do it in so many different ways that they're going to have to commit. And that's going to make it easier, particularly as the game goes on and they get punched in the mouth again and again and again, to make that read option effective. And so just like you said, in terms of will, the Seahawks have the will to keep running because Marshawn Lynch is that damn good.
Yes. Getting back to that Green Bay game, and I thought
it was a fascinating game.
It's one of those games that you can literally that will age well, will age extremely well. Like, you can watch 10 years from now and be like, "What in the world? How did this happen?" It's one of those games. You bring up the game all the time, the Minnesota New Orleans championship game from 2009 as one of those games. Yeah. This one is definitely in that category. Like, just it's amazing. It's just an amazing game to watch. One of the old untold stories that came out of that game that didn't get enough play to me was the awful, and you just mentioned, the awful play calling by Seattle in that first half. I'm like, you have Marshawn Lynch. Why are you throwing these passes with Russell Wilson? That's not his first. Their passing game is average. And not to say he's an average thrower, but look, they have no receivers. I'm sorry, Doug Baldwin. You guys are average receivers. You're average at best. And
they've identified where they're going to spend their money, and clearly where they're not going to spend their money is in the receiver department.
that's not where the money's going to go.
Absolutely.
No, it has worked perfectly for them. Mm-hmm. I think more teams should probably think about that motto and not go out there and give so and so $80 million. Like, good, you know what, Dallas, you want to give Dez Bryant $100 million? Be my guest and see how that works out. But
nobody wins championships around receivers. Detroit tried that 4 years in a row. Didn't work out for them.
Didn't work out. No, it doesn't. It's just not. There's so many reasons why we can. This is could be another conversation, but so many reasons why you don't build around receivers.
Yes.
Considering,
yes.
It's endless. But I'm looking at that game in the first half. I'm like, what the hell? What are they doing? Like, why is Russell Wilson? Yeah, he's throwing a lot of picks, but the fact that he's throwing this much is a problem. Like, what you doing? This is not how you got to becoming who you are as a football team. This is not your identity. Second half, they got back to who they are. Smash mouth, give Marshawn Lynch a ball. And truthfully, not only in terms of the running of the ball with Marshawn Lynch is a great pass catcher.
He's so good.
He's probably their best receiver.
I agree with that. That play where he slips out of the backfield, I've seen it at least 4 times this year, where he'll slip out of the backfield. It won't even be necessarily designed, right there. He'll just, fake the block, kind of, slip, and then do, one of the curls. And then the way that he hugs the sideline, it's just, perfectly, right there. And Russell Wilson drops that thing in so beautifully every single time I've seen him run it's worked for a touchdown. Every single time.
I'm telling you right now, you will see that play in this game. I would be shocked if you don't see that play in this game.
It's not like it was. It's a screen. It's like he literally starts running, and Russell Wilson puts that ball in Lynch's hands 20 yards down the field.
It's like a wheel route.
Yes, that's what I think it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right down the sidelines. You know, again, you need good pass protection on it for him to get down the field that far for it to develop and for it to happen. But it is a great play call. And it's not brain surgery. This is basketball. This is any sport. You get the ball in the plans of your best players, and that's it. There's all there is to it. He is your best player. This guy, you know, Lynch, this guy on the field in between those white lines, he is a monster. This guy is an absolute monster, and not only does he energize the offense, he energizes their whole team. Like you look at the sidelines with the defense, they get fired up based on how he runs the football, because in many ways he plays like them on offense.
Yep.
He's like a defender on offense. Big, physical, does not go out of bounds. He punishes the teams, and there's a reason why. He is, to me, the number one reason why in the second half, fourth quarter, Seattle destroys people. I mean, they break teams' will in the fourth quarter of games, because it's like boxing. You're taking so many body blows, round after round after round after round. It gets to that 15th round, then next thing you know, you get knocked out.
And just like what you said right there, Cyril, is the key to the game. That is the absolute key to the game, because I'll say this continuously until it changes in the AFC. The Patriots have not experienced that this entire year. There is nobody that they have played that's had the consistent will to run the ball for four quarters. There's been nobody that they've played like that.
No.
You know, and it's Dallas it's Dallas and Seattle, of course. And then maybe Kansas City sometimes, maybe. But if you think about even like all the leading rushers.
Look at the Seattle losses. I'm glad because you brought up a couple of them. I'm glad you brought that up. So they lose Kansas City. We know Kansas City, power running team, great defense. Power running team, great defense. Doesn't ask a quarterback to make a lot of mistakes. And Alex Smith is a running quarterback who's capable of running. So from that standpoint, they lose to St. Louis. I'm talking that one. That game was just one of the wildest special teams trickery.
Yep.
But again, physical defense. Trey Mason run the football, physicality. Both those teams had a physicality to them. The Dallas game, again, before they were healthy, this was before they were healthy, but still, Dallas had the blueprint as far as we are going to run the football and not ask Tony Romo to make too many plays.
Yep.
And their last loss was, what was that? Who was their fourth loss against?
San Diego?
Yes. San Diego, right. So the San Diego game was, again, very early in the season, very early.
Yep.
But Phillip Rivers was near perfect in that game. And Seattle had a bunch of turns. Seattle played a sloppy game. This was the common denominator. Antonio Gates had a huge game in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Had three touchdowns, had like six catches for 96 yards. Big game. So the common denominator of all those games is physical play, running the football, physical defense, and great tight end play. So New England has to combine all those ingredients. That's a lot to do. They have to combine all of that in order to try to win this football game. Mind you, again, three of those losses came early. Like they're on an 8-game winning streak. So, you know, the San Diego game was very early. Kansas City game was very early. Like nobody has beaten them since the game.
Those are really early games. But there's, you know, you grab what you can out of those games to implement into your program. And so by definition, what the Patriots are going to want to do defensively against that offense is be physical at the point of attack. So whether that's the running game or whether that's those quick outs or whatever, they're going to want to be physical with that group at the point of attack. And then I think probably what they are salivating on more than anything is being able to turn the ball over.
Yes.
Stripping the wide receivers.
Yep.
Or stripping, I mean, essentially the same thing because the wide receivers are on special teams. But, yeah, that group proved themselves vulnerable to not being able to handle the ball, right?
Yes.
So
I mean,
whether it be like tipping it, like everything like that, it looks like if I was New England, what I want to do is I want to play, be close up on the receivers, you know, press up on them, and then almost even like allow that ball to travel through the air, and then play the ball right there for tips, for passes, for interceptions like that. Or receiver gets the ball, if we can just hit this, strip it from them, they are vulnerable to that.
No question. Also, I mean, I think New England has an advantage with the special teams in terms of the field goal kickers. Like, I trust Gutkowski more than Hauschka, even though Hauschka is very good, but he doesn't have the Gutkowski range. So they have an advantage in that. I don't think they're going to have as many opportunities as Green Bay has. Like, I don't think Seattle's going to give them
the
opportunities
not.
To make plays on the receiver.
I agree. So
when those opportunities are there to be made, at times they'll get a couple. They're going, like you said, they're going to have to make plays on those receivers when the opportunity presents itself. Because they're going to be few and far between, very few and far between. Like, even as bad as Russell Wilson was, and he was horrible, a couple of those plays, the receivers
was on curse.
Yes, and that's another thing. I'm like, at a certain point, I'm like, dude, I'm just gonna start throwing the ball to you. I'm like, this is not turning out well. He was like, five targets, four picks. I'm like, at some point, after pick number two, I'm going in a different direction.
Let's try somebody else for a little bit.
Also, when we look at Seattle's offense against New England's defense, one of the people that has a chance to make some noise that we haven't talked about and hasn't gotten too much talk over the course of the last 2 weeks, Luke Wilson. Very, very good tight end. Has made some big plays over the course of this season when he's got an opportunity to do so. New England is not great against tight ends by any stretch of the imagination. So again, New England with that secondary, the secondary is designed to take away your receivers.
Yeah.
So they're willing to give up plays to the tight end, plays to the tight end to keep receivers to hold the opposing receivers down. So Luke Wilson, don't be surprised if you get one of those five catch 80-yard games out of Luke Wilson. He could be one of those unsung heroes.
Absolutely, because it will, and I'm sure the Patriots are preaching this, once Russell breaks contain, he's still looking. That's what also makes him dangerous than Kaepernick, and then I'll just go Kaepernick for right now. That's what makes him more more dangerous is that he's done a fantastic job of being able to break the pocket, break contain, and then look downfield and almost in a read option way keep the defense guessing if he's going to pass or if he's going to throw it. He's not a quarterback that as soon as he breaks contain, he's just running. Like, that's just essentially what he's going to do. He's still looking downfield, and oftentimes Luke Wilson is his target because you're right. The DBs start scrambling. They look to identify the receivers. And here comes, plunky Luke Wilson. Next thing you know, he's 30, 40 yards down the field. Wilson, the linebackers come up, the safeties come up. Wilson, boom, put that thing right in the middle. So I absolutely 100% agree with you that we're going to see You know, we're going to hear from Luke Wilson, and it could be like one of those, you know, sneaky good games.
Which coach to you is more likely to do a trick play or to show something that we completely haven't seen? Which, like, are you looking for some trickery in this game on special teams, onside kick, fake punt, fake field goal? Which do you expect to see that in this game, or do you think both coaches will play sort of close to the vest, trusting what they already do?
Belichick's going to come out with something formation-wise. He'll definitely come out with something formation-wise different. So I think the easy answer to that is Belichick. And then I think it's about game flow and, like, what position each team puts the other one in to see if there's something that they go into their deep bag of tricks. I do think there's the potential to see, some trick on special teams play. Or, you know, in those, like, fourth and one moments, you know, we have two head coaches that
are very aggressive.
You know, in those fourth and one moments. So I do think we have some potential to see some things happen during those times, you know, that we haven't seen before. So I would say probably the over-under is, if you put it, you know, I would put the over on Belichick, and then I would say I would also put the over on one or more trick plays, either on fourth and one, special teams, something.
A couple of sporting notes before we get to predictions here. Serena Williams wins her 19th.
Yep.
19th major. I watched the match. Amazingly, I don't know how I was up to watch the match, but I woke up at 3 o'clock, and I was like, oh, it's going to be on, and watched it from start to finish. Tremendous match. I give Sharapova a lot of credit. Normally, I don't care. I could care less about the loser in the match, to be honest with you. But I give Sharapova a ton of credit because she fought tooth and nail with Serena. And, you know, it's one of those things. Like, for somebody to beat you, like, 16 straight times, like, that, listen, Sharapova is a Hall of Fame tennis player. She's won all five, she's won all four majors herself. You know, she's has five majors total, so she's going to the Hall of Fame. And then number two player in the world, but Serena is just the greatest of all time in my mind.
It's frustrating as a player because you're absolutely right. Sharapova is just the Hall of Fame player, but it's just kind of like the people who grew, you know, outside of 2 years with Jordan, you know, who came of their own at the exact same time Jordan came of his own. You know, it's just like they had the unfortunate time of being parallel
to
the greatest player that has ever lived. And you're absolutely right. Serena Williams is the greatest women's tennis player.
She's the greatest
that has ever lived.
Period. Yes. When you look, I watched Graf. I watched Lil Martina-Navratilova. They have more majors, but I'm looking at impact on the sport. And I'm looking at longevity. I thought about it while I was watching the match. I'm looking at the match on a flat screen Vizio high definition television, at her winning this major. The first time I saw her win a major was in college on a 13-inch, no remote control. Matter of fact, I did have a remote control. I had to hook up my VCR to the television to create a remote control.
Oh, yeah, I remember those days.
This is 1999. So brought me back. I'm like, this is the most amazing point. And we talk about the Spurs in terms of how many years between titles from their first to their last. That is unbelievable. She was 17 years old at the 1999 U.S. Open as a 17-year-old, when at that time Venus Williams was the better of the two players, more popular, well-known.
Mm-hmm.
17 years old, and to look at her 16 years later, still on top of the sport, not just playing it out. I mean, even Federer, who's ranked number two, we know Federer is clearly in his twilight and may not win another major. This woman still is on top of the sport. It's unbelievable when you really step back and look at it, put everything in perspective. It is unreal for her to be at this level at the age of 33, when most players are either retired or just can't play anymore. You know, tennis is the ultimate, like the NFL source, but tennis is the ultimate. You get a 5 to 7, 8 year window, and that's it. And careers, you know, men and women are retired by 30, some even younger than that. So what she's doing is just, I hope she gets the credit that she deserves. It sounds like she is getting the credit that she deserves, but she deserves, like, she, you know, she's in the early running for sports person of the year. I know it's early in the sports year, but she's that good. She's that great.
We use all these, you know, these words and everything, or adjectives to describe men, so it might not be flattering to women, but she's a beast. She's a physical specimen. She's an absolute animal, and she works, you know, hard at her craft. And I think that might have been a knock a little bit early on, particularly when she got that initial success, you know, that her attention waned from tennis, you know, a little bit. But that hasn't been true for a very, very long time now.
No, These last 5 years, she's just been as focused as she can be, as a player can be. I mean, you know, I think it got to a point to where she realized that she was running out of time to win more majors and really totally just engulfed herself in tennis. I mean, she's cursing herself out even after she wins points. That's like, she's that intense. Like, she's a perfectionist. She's the ultimate perfectionist.
She should be in the conversation when all is said and done for best athlete of all time.
Absolutely. Oh, no, without question.
Everybody talks about Tiger, and I think one of your notes is going to be on Tiger. She has dominated her sport in a way in which, you know, everybody should be in awe of.
I am absolutely in awe of it, without question. The flip side of Serena Williams, and there are two flip sides. There are two guys I'm bringing up. I'll leave Tiger for the end. Josh Gordon, it's just a very sad story. Josh Gordon, of course, is going to be suspended a year for testing positive for alcohol use, failed the alcohol test. And what made it worse was sad that he got suspended, that he put himself in that position. But what made it worse is he comes out with this letter in terms of ripping people who fairly criticized him in terms of him throwing his life away. Whether it's Stephen A. Smith, Charles Barkley, other sports talking heads. And I'm like, I read the letter. Al, did you read the letter?
Yeah, I did read it.
It's open. Yeah. So I'm like, first of all, and you know this as well as I do, it takes a lot of, I don't write many letters. I don't know when the last time I've written a letter, because letters take time. They take thoughts. It takes a lot to write a letter. You have to put a lot of thought and planning in writing a letter. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, dude, had you taken that kind of time and energy that you wrote this letter into your life in terms of your decision-making, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. I said, if you could take this time to write this passionate letter about it, and the letter was a bunch of BS. I'm not giving him credit for the letter by any stretch of imagination. It was a bunch of garbage. He sounds like a typical addict. I'm not an addict. That's what usually the typical addict, you know, they can't like get around to the fact that they are an addict, whether it's alcohol or drugs. It's just that like they can't admit to it. So that's his number one problem. But I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, dude, you took all this time to write this letter when your life is falling apart. And again, hopefully, the NFL, he now should be suspended. He should be banned from the NFL until he gets his life together. He should not just suspended. He should be banned. Because how many times is it like, does he have to end up dead somewhere? I mean, how many times does this have to happen in order for us to realize that this guy clearly has a problem? He's an addict.
Yeah, I just, you know, I want him to get his life together.
Just get your, I mean, forget
kid.
About, yes,
you know.
Forget about football, man. Forget about football. Get your life. Just get your life together. Just get yourself in a position where you can function day to day. I mean, I hate to see stuff like that. I mean, obviously the money's throwing away the fame, but put all that aside. It's about I just want the dude to just be able to live a regular life, just a regular life. And again, it's a sad state of affairs when it comes to Josh Gordon. As far as Tiger Woods, and before we get to predictions, as far as Tiger Woods goes, Tiger Woods, of course, shoots in a career high 82, 13 over. And it's funny because
he got a career high. That's good, right?
Yeah,
career
that's
high.
Good. No, not the career high he wants.
Oh, this is golf. High's
golf.
Not good.
The high's not good.
We want low. Oh, that's right.
If you're Kyrie Irving and scoring 82 points, that's great. Or Kobe Bryant.
That's great.
Or 82. Pushing, that's great.
He scored 82. Woo! Oh, that's right. It's golf. That's not good.
It's funny, man. It's funny from the standpoint.
Not good.
It's funny from a standpoint, when I saw this, the first thing I thought about was the conversation we had yesterday about Tiger. And I was like, this is hilarious. It's hilarious. We're just talking about this dude. And listen, Tiger, let's be fair, Tiger's finished. I mean, let's be real about that. He's done. He's done in terms of winning Grand Slams. He's done in terms of being just, to me, relevant. And you know, I kind of compare it to, I'm trying to think, celebrities, entertainers. I don't know. He's like Al Pacino right now. Like, just maybe, you know, he's probably even worse. Because at least Al Pacino will come out with something on HBO that'll be pretty good. That'd be like, okay. But as far as movie making, Al Pacino probably should never, ever make another movie again. It's just at that point, it's over. It's over. And once you get to a point to where your team, where you are part of something that's not relevant, or where you're not relevant as a professional or as a player in any realm of life, it's probably time to move on to the next phase of your life. And that's where I'm at with Tiger. Like, dude, you're not relevant. And the thing about it is, you know, his game, he has a B game, a C game right now, but people had A expectations of it. Like, the expectations don't match his skill set at this point in time. And it's getting to a point, it's really sad to watch, to be honest with you. It really is. Because, you know, we remember Tiger for what he was, you know, not only with, you know, that 2008 U.S. Open, but even after that, even when he wasn't winning majors after that, before, again, the bottom line, he hasn't recovered from that Thanksgiving weekend in 2009. He has, like, 6 years later, almost 6 years later, he hasn't recovered. He just hasn't. Mentally, physically, he has not been the same player, and it's only gotten progressively worse with injuries and Tiger is finished. I mean, I hate to say it, but it is what it is. There's nothing personal against him. All I can do is go by the results. That's all I can go by. I mean, players don't have, forget about having any fear of him. Other players aren't even talking about him in terms of who he had to beat to win this tournament. They're talking Rory McIlroy. They're talking Bubba Watson. You know, you hear those names like that, Ricky Fowler. Like, Tiger's name is not even in the conversation at all. Those are my three non-football, because you had Josh Gordon, but, you know, a couple of sporting notes to talk about. I know our audience is not going to be surprised by any prediction by our predictions, because we've kind of been leaning in the same direction. So this might be the last year. This reminds me of last year's program before Super Bowl. Like, people are like, fans of New England are like, should I watch the game? Yes, watch the game. Watch the game. Watch the game. But I kind of know where you're going to lean at. Give me a score. Score, MVP, Super Bowl 49.
Okay. So I thought a lot about the, you know, doing a reverse jinx. Reverse jinxing the Patriots, but I'm not exactly sure who I want to win at this point in time. And I think the true litmus test will be when I sit down, when the game starts, how I feel, right? When I sat down and watched the Green Bay Seattle game, and I was just like, okay, I just want to see a good game. And I found myself rooting for Green Bay. Like that just happened. So sometimes it happens like that. So I don't even know if even the reverse things would even work in this case, because it's not a team that I care passionately about on the opposite side of it. So with that being said, I think 17 is the magic number defensively, what you want to hold New England to. In their two Super Bowl losses to the Giants, you know, they didn't get over 17 points. So I think defensively that's what they're looking at. I do think it's going to be a close game, but not the one over that Vegas is talking about, and not the field goal, of course. So I will go 24-17 Seahawks, and of course I think Marshawn Lynch will be the MVP, because that would just wow, beautiful.
Yep. I would love for him to be MVP. Love for it. There's really nothing outside of somebody hearing a story where Marshawn Lynch is injured before the game or something crazy. There's nothing that I can see changing how I feel right now. I told you earlier in the week or yesterday that Wednesday I had a pretty good feel of where direction I was going in terms of my pick. I think this is if this was possible, it's not possible. If both teams could lose, I would love that. That'd be my dream. Can we have two losers? Nobody gets a title. Title vacant for 2014. Because I hate both of these teams. But I'll be rooting for Seattle because I can't do Belichick, Brady, Deflake. I can't Robert Kraft. They've become to me I just can't do it. They're what I feel about the Yankees, the Cowboys, Notre Dame, teams that I just completely despise to no end. They hit that level, and they weren't at that level before this year, to be honest with you. But this year, what has transpired, they're at that level now. I detest the Patriots. So I'll be rooting for Seattle. I'll be rooting for a good game. Last year was just an embarrassment. It was just ugly. I mean, it was beautiful to watch from a defense standpoint because it's such a defensive masterpiece from that standpoint. But I want a competitive game, and I think we're going to get a competitive game. I think we'll get a four-quarter game. I think the blueprint will be simple, and it will be simple in terms of how Seattle games are going. I could see New England, the game either being tied, or maybe New England either ahead in the first half, at halftime. I think New England will wear them down. Seattle will wear them down, and I think they will pull away late quarter and win. I'm looking 24-14. Looking 24-14. That's the score I got in my head. So Marshawn Lynch is the MVP, and that will be hilarious.
Yes, it will.
With those cameras in this say, oh, that would be so hilarious. I'm rooting for that even more than I'm rooting for Seattle. But I just think this is an all-time great defense. Historically, again, the great defense versus a great offense. The defense has won. Way too much has been made about Seattle's struggles against Green Bay. Green Bay could have easily been a Super Bowl champion this year. Let's make no mistake about that. That was a championship team they beat in terms of Green Bay. You know, when you look at teams trying to repeat in a lot of sports, a lot of times you have that game where you almost lose. You overcome that, and then after that, the team just rolls to a championship, or that ignites the team. The fact that they were able to overcome five turnovers and hold Green Bay to 22 points was unreal.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
That's to me, that's even more of a testament to their defense than anything else.
Right.
Team, like they were, like literally, the opposing offense was starting from their 30, their 20,
their
40.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
What? Like, you know, and not any opposing offense. Green Bay.
We're talking
opposing
Green
offense.
Bay. This was the highest scoring. Green Bay was the highest scoring offense in the league this year. So.
That impressed me even more so than usual. When the defense is already impressive enough, you know, like that impressed me even more.
I think too much is being made on how they struggle against Green Bay. I'm thinking to myself, again, Green Bay won 12 games this year. Seattle, New England both won 12 games. Like, Green Bay was a big-time team, had a very good year this year, very good year. So I can't get caught up in what New England did against Indianapolis and try to compare it to what Seattle against struggles against Green Bay. That's just that's moronic to make those comparisons. That's moronic. So with that being said, again, I like Seattle. I think Seattle, again, this is an all-time great defense, three straight years. We mentioned before, three straight years of holding teams, you know, first in the league in terms of scoring defense, something that we don't see that often. You mentioned it before, the back-to-back years of points allowed and yards allowed first in those categories. And I just think that they have, and again, it goes against conventional wisdom. Normally you take the better coach, better quarterback, but Seattle defies logic. When you think about this, they defy logic in so many ways of how football is played in 2014. They defy logic with their defense. They defy logic with the running game. They defy logic in terms of just how they win football games. So, I have to go away from what I traditionally think in terms of how these games are going to go. With again, the great coach and great quarterback combination. I mean, the Brady Belichick combination is obviously, you know, is one of the best, if not the best, in the terms of NFL history. But again, this is they are playing a different animal. And again, I've watched New England against great defensive teams in Super Bowls, or good defensive teams in Super Bowls. It has not turned out well. That defense, this defense, the Giant defense that they played against twice, can hold a candle to this defense. It was a good Giant defenses. This is an all-time great defense. And, again, I like Seattle a lot in this game. Thinking again, close game, pull away late, entertaining Super Bowl. Luke Wilson as an unsung hero, possibly. You know, for New England, I mean, maybe Shane Vereen could be a guy who makes some plays make some plays for them. If they were to have a surprise guy, I was thinking about him. Because I think Edelman and LaFell are going to get destroyed. I'm looking at what Seattle did to the New England, the Denver receivers. I know Demaryius Thomas had a great game, but that was more about, to me, garbage yards and catches. More.
Yeah.
The game was already decided.
Yeah,
the game was already. First of all, Demaryius Thomas, it was amazing that Demaryius Thomas was even breathing after that hit by Cam Chancellor in that first quarter. So I give him credit for that standpoint, from being able to finish the game. But I don't think the receivers on both teams will be a factor, much of a factor in terms of pass catching. I think the receivers will both teams' receivers will be more of a factor in terms of blocking for the running backs. But as far as catching the ball, good luck in terms of both receivers, because these are two big time secondaries. So with all that being said, I like Seattle 24-14, and I think for the first time since 2004 that we will have a repeat Super Bowl champion. And it, I'm telling you right now, Seattle as defending, as repeat Super Bowl champions, oh my goodness, you will not shut them up from now until the season opens next September. Could you imagine them as winning again, and what the, like, how that's going to look?
Either team is going to be insufferable. So it's just like,
either way, doesn't matter.
Either team.
And you are right there in the AFC East. So it's like, I mean, yeah, for you, like, they are not, it's not a New England fan base. Oh my God, I can't take it. At least Seattle has a smaller fan base as far as nationwide. They don't have the following. The New England fan base, it seems like I'm running the Patriot fans this all the time. I'm like, dang, they're coming
from? You know, they'll have plenty of just to say, Seattle has plenty of following, and they'll have more following if they win another Super Bowl. That's how the Patriots, nobody cared about the Patriots circa 2000, you know.
Nobody cared
about the Patriots. It's when they started winning, that's when all these people are now fans, blah, whatever.
Nobody's going to get that. No. So, I mean, we can attest, being in D.C., you know, seeing people with Seattle Seahawks hats.
Oh,
you can't identify Seattle on a map, let alone.
If I see the next person I see with a Seattle hat, I'm just going to ask them, which state is Seattle in? I want you to answer. How long it takes them to answer that. What state? Seattle? You really know what state Seattle's in? Please, come on. You're in D.C. with a Seattle hat. The best excuse somebody can give me is I like the colors. I'll let you ride with that excuse. You like the colors. I might let you get away with
it. There'll be plenty. Either team wins, it'll be insufferable for the rest of us.
Oh, my goodness. Either team, but if it's New England, because if New England wins, it's like Brady's the greatest quarterback ever, Belichick's the greatest player, the greatest coach ever, we got the greatest dynasty ever. It's going to be like, oh my goodness, either team, but especially for New England, I've had enough of them winning year in year out. I respect the franchise. I respect, you know, their consistency, but like I said earlier, if there was a way that both teams could lose, it would be perfect for me. I've never felt that in the Super Bowl. Like, I've never felt that. Like, I've normally had a pretty good rooting interest or not minded one team. Like, I wouldn't have mind last year if Denver would have won. I really wouldn't have. You know, Peyton getting another championship, that was a great offense. But this is the first time I was just like, yeah, I hate both of these teams. Like, it's unbelievable. So, looking forward to it tomorrow around 6:30. Of course, Super Bowl day is the longest day of a sports day for a big game in history. The day takes forever. Food, nap, you know. Run an errand. That'd be my recommendations. If you don't try to wait till the game starts. Don't do that to yourself as a sports fan. It's torture. Don't do it. That is a perfect day. You know, if you're married, you know, get a few favors in for the wife. That's perfect day. You need me to go to the store or something? Like, that is a perfect time for that before the game. Because the Super Bowl sports day is the longest sporting day of the year. It takes forever for the game to get there. Like, I don't know if there are any NBA games, prominent NBA games on. I don't think so. Tomorrow is the perfect time to run some errands up until game time. Watch a movie. You know, the movies. You can go to the movie. You can go see some good movies out. Go see a movie. Don't try to wait. Please don't try to wait. Unless you're hosting a party, which I'm not, but you're hosting a party, I guess you know, party planning and what have you. But again, should be a very good game. Looking forward to it. As always, Robert Sapp, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, sir.
All right, take it easy. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be back early next week with a NFL wrap-up, Super Bowl wrap-up, capping off the 2014 season. Enjoy your football weekend. So long.